Chapter 6 22,000 kilometres ahead of Oenone, the tiny blue iron-manoeuvring jets of the Atomist starship Dimasio were consumed by the interstellar night. Syrinx watched through the Void Hawk's optical senses as the intense pinprick of light dwindled away to nothing. Directional vectors swirled away at the back of her mind, an unconscious calculation performed in conjunction with Oenone's spatial instinct. The Dimasio had lined up on the Honex star system 8 light-years away. The alignment checked out perfectly. "I think this is it," she told Thetis. Greer, her brother's Void Hawk, was drifting 1,000 kilometers to one side of Oenone. The two Void Hawks had their distortion fields reduced to a minimum. They were operating in full stealth mode with minimal energy expenditure. There wasn't even any gravity in the crew toroid. The crew hadn't eaten any hot meals. There had been no waste dumps, all of them peeing and crapping into sanitary bags, and there was definitely no hot water. Blanket webs of heat duct cables had been laid over Oenone's hull and crew toroid alike, then smothered by a thick, light-absorbent insulation foam. All the starship's waste heat was siphoned off by the blankets and radiated away through a single dump panel, always orientated away from their prey. Holes had been left for Oenone's sensor blisters, but that was all. Oenone kept complaining that the covering itched, which was ridiculous, but Syrinx held her peace for now. "I agree," Thetis replied. Syrinx felt a shiver of trepidation mingling with a release of pent-up tension. They had been following the Dimasio for 17 days, keeping 20,000 to 30,000 kilometers behind as it zigzagged between uninhabited star systems on a totally random course designed to spot and shake off any possible pursuer. A chase of that nature was demanding and difficult, putting a strain on even Edenist psyches, let alone the 20-strong Adamus naval marine squad they were carrying. Seeing the way their hard-pressed captain, Larry Kuritz, had maintained discipline throughout the mission had sparked a rare respect, and there weren't many Adamists who rated that. With the final coordinate insertion maneuvers complete, she could imagine the Dimasio retracting its sensors and thermodump panels, configuring itself for the jump, charging its patterning nodes with energy. "Ready?" she asked Oenone. "I'm always ready," the Void Hawk replied tartly. Yes, she would be very glad when this mission was over. It had been Thetis who persuaded her to sign on with the Confederation Navy for a 7-year tour. Thetis, with his strong sense of duty and commitment, goaded by a willful zest. Syrinx had always intended to put in a naval stint. Athene had often told her rumbustious children of her service days, painting an enticing picture of gallantry and camaraderie. She just hadn't anticipated it to be quite so soon, 3 years after she and Oenone started flying. With their power and agility, Void Hawks were an essential component of the Confederation Navy, employed by fleet admirals as ideal interception craft. After being fitted out with both offensive and defensive combat systems, and an extensive array of electronic sensors, then undergoing a 3-month procedural training course, Oenone and Greer had been assigned to the 4th Fleet, operating from the Japanese Imperium capital, Oshanko. Although the Confederation Navy was a dedicated, supranational organization, Void Hawks always had Edenist crews. Syrinx had kept her original crew. Cacus, the life support engineer, Edwin, in charge of the toroid's mechanical and electrical systems, Oxley, who piloted both the multifunction service vehicle and the atmospheric ironfield flyer, Tula, the ship's generalist and medical officer, and Reuben, the fusion generator technician who had become Syrinx's lover a month after he came on board, and, at 125, was exactly a century older than her. It was like Orly all over again, an aspect which made her feel incredibly girlish and carefree, almost an antithesis of her responsibilities as captain. They slept together when the ship's schedules permitted, and spent all their shore leave ranging across whatever planet, habitat, or asteroid settlement they were visiting. Although well into middle age, Reuben, like all Edenists, was still more than capable physically, so their sex life was